I think like what this is going to result in is probably like almost more software developers, or at least software developers who are like more and more productive, you know, and producing more output, you know.
Hello and welcome to episode 77 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. I'm your host, Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a company that positions itself as an indispensable tool for modern developers aiming to revolutionize how code is written and managed with a focus on AI-powered efficiency and a strong user base. It provides a significant boost to developers' productivity and code quality. That company is Bitto, and I'm talking to the co-founder and CEO of Bitto, Amar Goyal. How you doing?
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here, and yeah, love your podcast.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And hopefully we're going to even make it even better when we just kick off a 2024 talking about AI and something that, you know, I think everyone wants to hear about, especially when it comes to the DevOps world, to coding and how generative AI can help. And you guys are at the forefront of that. But just before we get into all that, just as a reminder, if you're into great things with great tech, we'd like to feature in future episodes, please click on the link on the show notes, head to gtwgt.com. Hit like and subscribe. Go to YouTube as well. We're on there, all past episodes. Also on all podcast platforms, the Google, Apple, Spotify, whatever it is, all hosted and distributed by Spotify Podcasts. All right, Emma, with all that, let's talk a little bit about Bitto. Actually, let's talk deeply into Bitto because it's a fascinating company, representative of where we are in 2024 with AI. But firstly, give us a little bit of background about yourself and how you came to co-found the company.
Yeah, so I live in the Bay Area, and I'm originally from the Bay Area, but sort of grew up kind of traveling around. I lived in New York for a while. My wife and I, we actually moved to Mumbai and lived, or Bombay, depending on what you say. It's funny, technically the term's Mumbai, but I noticed everyone who lives there says Bombay still.
I'm going there in a couple of months, so I'll let you know what people say.
Oh, nice. Cool. Well, have a great time. Let me know if you need any tips or anything. But in any case, yeah, so moved back to the Bay Area in 2017, like I said, which is where I'm from, and have been an entrepreneur for, you know, quite a long time. I started an e-commerce company when I was in college in the late 90s internet boom, and then spent some time in corporate America at McKinsey and Microsoft, and then started a company, Pubmatic. One of my co-founders at Bitto was one of my co-founders at Pubmatic, and we were very fortunate that company grew significantly and went public in 2020. It was sort of a software company focused on digital advertising. Okay. And Anand and myself, my co-founder, and our third co-founder, Mugesh, we all kind of really thought it would be great to build a new company. And so we started Bitto. And we've always been focused on developers, but we kind of ended up migrating our focus a little bit over time.
So how does that, I'm fascinated in that. I mean, you've wrapped up what seems like a pretty interesting career in about a minute and a half, right? Up to Bitto, but which is the way. But, you know, what, before we get into it, what dragged you over to go back to India at the time?
Yeah, yeah. So it was, you know, it was in 2006, and my wife and I, we were living in New York. She's from New York. And both of us, I was 30, she was 27. We just thought, oh, it'd be fun to go, you know, life in New York was great and we were having a good time, but we thought, oh, it'd be fun to go live abroad, go live somewhere else. And so we thought about moving to Europe, and then we, you know, she's also of Indian descent. She's from New York, but her parents, you know, were Indian. So we thought, oh, maybe India would be an interesting place to live. And so we just kind of started thinking about London or somewhere else in Europe. And then we thought, you know, there's a lot going on in India, and, you know, we're Indian, like it would be great to go live there. So we moved there in 2006, and we thought we were going to live there 3 to 5 years, ended up being there for 10 years. And it's a little longer than we planned. Both of our boys were born there, crazily enough, which is something I never would have thought. And we moved back in 2016 to the US.
Yeah. And obviously you would have picked up a lot of, you know, India is obviously well renowned for being strong in the development sector, right? So I'm guessing you were working pretty hard there and picking up a lot of the skills to be able to lead you to, you know, the Microsoft and then the founding of the first company that went public, right? So you've obviously honed yourself from that trip as well.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I mean, I actually studied computer science in college, but I wasn't, you know, and I did an internship as a software engineer at Netscape, the
Oh,
original.
wow. There you go. Now we're getting into it. That's cool.
Yeah, the young ones probably wouldn't, they would be like, what's that? You know, but
Yeah, exactly.
that was like the hottest company on the planet, you know, back in
Absolutely.
the way back years of 1996 and 97, right? I have a really funny anecdote. I don't know if I should say it, but
No,
it's
go for it.
kind of funny. So I was an intern at Netscape, and Jim Barksdale was the CEO at the time, and Marc Andreessen was the you know, one of the co-founders. He was the CTO, and so Jim Barksdale held a like an intern summer cocktail or something like that at his house. So, you know, there was probably like 50 interns or something. We were all in his backyard and everyone was just chatting away. Marc Andreessen was there and Jim and, you know, like other people and the interns. And then these kind of two dogs were there and then they jump into the pool. And then, you know, it's kind of like they jump in, but it's not like a big deal. And then all of a sudden, Marc Andreessen goes, "Oh, bleep. Those are my dogs. They can't swim. They're just kind of, you know, like sinking to the bottom of the pool." And so he just like full on jumps into the pool, like full on clothes, you know, his like whatever cell phones we had back then, wallet, whatever, and just jumps in the pool and goes to the bottom and drags his dogs back out. Luckily, they were okay and everyone was okay or whatever. But it was kind of amazing, you know.
It's an interesting story, right? Like, you know, those dogs obviously wanted some attention, and you know, obviously from his point of view, back then, where he's got to now in the industry, like absolute legendary status with what he does today and all that investing and whatnot. That's pretty crazy. That's an awesome experience for you as well. So,
yeah, that's great.
And then and then getting into why did you found Bitto? Like, what was the origin of the company? What was the problem statement? And maybe actually, before that, just explain a little bit more about what Bitto is and what it does. Like, I sometimes forget to ask that question, but you know, let's start there and then go to the actual founding reason for it.
Yeah. So, you know, Bitto, you know, our kind of belief and what we're focused on is that we really think Gen AI is going to transform how software development happens and how software developers work. And we think that over the next 5 to 10 years, software developers are going to become, you know, 10 to 20 times more productive. And we're going to build better code. And, you know, like it's really going to be very transformative. It isn't going to be like, oh yeah, like it helps me a little bit, you know? And so, you know, we think it's kind of like the next is here today, but the next big kind of abstraction, you know, layer for software developers and sort of how software is, you know, made. I mean, sorry, to go back to like Marc Andreessen for a second, I guess he is a legend. You know, his whole essay, right, about software is eating the world, like,
yep,
kind of feels like we haven't seen anything yet, actually, you know, like
scary. That's a good
point. The amount of software that will be possible to be built now and tested and be robust and be, you know, be high quality. One way to think about it could be, if you think about your, like in software, right, you like tracking your requirements, you have a backlog of like all these features you want to get to, but you never got to them because you're like, well, I only have so many software engineers and they can only do so much, right? And so this thing just isn't worth us building at this point because only 42 people are going to use it. And this other feature, 10,000 people are going to use. But now with generative AI, you could be like, actually, we can build that really quickly. And 42 people is enough to make it worthwhile, you know? And so that's kind of, you know, one like model I think about is like, it's not just about writing code, but the entire, that means that you need to test more code. That means you need to do more code reviews. That means you need to do, you know, like you need to build more software. So it's going to change kind of how, you know, everything kind of happens. And so we think that like the tooling that's going to be required for software developers to live in this new world, you know, is going to really change. And we also think, you know, I think that like we're at GPT-4 today, we're at Anthropic's Claude 2, we're at Gemini Pro or supposedly Ultra, you know, whenever it comes out. I mean, there's going to be an Ultra squared and an Ultra cubed, and there's going to be GPT-7. And so all these models are also improving, you know, at a significant rate. And so I think all of these things kind of combine to make like a perfect storm that will, you know, really help move the whole art forward.
Yeah. So in terms of how Bitto plays into that, what is it? And obviously you're working with IDEs, you know, development environments to help coders be efficient. You talked about code reviews, you know, QAing, all that kind of jazz. So what is Bitto itself? Like how does a coder or a DevOps guy who's looking at it today actually start to interact with it and use the product?
Yeah, yeah. So we launched the product in December of 2022, and we started out as a chat product in your IDE. So kind of like we sort of say ChatGPT in your IDE, right? So we work with Visual Studio Code, we work with all JetBrains IDEs, and so you could use it to write code, you could use it to, you know, write test cases, you could ask it to explain code. That's actually the number one use case. 21% of the
explain
time
code. Say, wow.
Hey, can you explain this code for me?
Interesting.
Which is kind of interesting. And actually about almost 10% of the time, people are saying, can you use it to document this code? So 30% of the time, people are using it to understand or explain to others what's going on, right? Which I found very interesting, which is, you know, not something you would have, you know, would have thought. Everyone always focuses on like writing code, but
yeah,
think about most developers, like a lot of times you're writing code related to something else that exists and you're like, I don't really understand what the heck this does or how it works, you know?
Can I expand that as well? And like from my perspective, my background working on the other side, like I started at university doing computer science, but I quickly realized that I didn't want to code for life. And so I went into the infrastructure hosting world, but I still needed to understand the code. I still needed to see the code that was being written that was going on my servers, because if it was bad code, it was going to impact the way that we did the ops, right? So
yeah.
I've always been interested in that. So, and that's still today. It's a lot of people do that. You know, it's not just the developers that are writing, it's people that need to understand what's going on. So if there's a way that we can interpret and understand code easier, like that would have saved tons of my time back in the day, right? And also what it does, it would have allowed me and allows people potentially to get more up to speed and quicker and learn, you know, what certain code segments are doing through explanation and also documentation. So to your point, I think this is more than just a writer, a coder's tool, because I see this being valuable for the other side, the ops guys.
Yeah. I mean, product managers also, you know, we hear from product managers. I mean, they're not like our big user base, but people are like, oh, now I can kind of understand what this commit that an engineer made is doing, or, you know, hey, I'm trying to figure out how something works in our code base. So I'd love to have it like something that it can explain me that code, or I can interrogate the code base or ask questions or whatever, you know? So, So going back to kind of what Bitto does. So yeah, so we started out with this, you know, chat product. And we also launched the code, what we call AI code completion. So as you're typing a line of code, it, you know, completes it, or you give us a comment in your IDE and it'll write a whole block of code. And one of the big things that we launched last year, in the summer is, we index your code base. And so, we understand your code and we're able to let you, you know, perform AI on that. Right. So you can actually say, hey, can you change this function? Or, you know, I want to, you know, I want to ask a question about my code base, or I want to like make a change to this database. Can you tell me all the changes I need to update? So it can do all of that because it can understand all the parts of your code base that are, you know, we use a vector database to do that. So we build like embeddings, like these large scale vectors, and then we're able to use that to kind of understand your code base. And that's actually one of the areas that we're focused on for the future, is really understanding your code really, really well. And it turns out it's a very important issue, but it's also kind of difficult. And so a lot of companies we've seen haven't really gone deeply into that. They've kind of stayed out of it, but we actually think one of our differentiators, but more importantly, to help developers. I think you can't just ignore all the code that they have that's been written,
I
especially
think it's,
in
yeah.
the enterprise use case.
I think it's important because, knowing a lot of developers, it's I've called it like copy devs. So, devs that basically take a snippet of code from here, a snippet of code from there, put it together, kind of mash it up and kind of make it their own. And I think there's a lot of that happens. There's very few developers out there that kind of are writing pure code from, the really brainy ones, right? That are just savants at it. So I feel like most coders kind of leverage other people's code to understand, learn, and adapt that to create what they need to create. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying all coders are, copies or whatever, but that's just the reality of it, right? So to your point, if you've got a system that can effectively validate and make sure that what they're copying is legit, works in company policy, in scope of project, all that kind of jazz, I think that's really valuable in itself, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, I think it's super, valuable and important. I mean, most of the time in an employment context, like in a job, like developers are not writing new code. They're like, or they're taking some existing code and then changing it. They might be adding to it or whatever, but they're taking something. They're not just like, oh, I'm just starting from new and writing a whole new module or class or, component, for us. So just coming back to Bitto for one second. So I think one of the big focus areas for us now, so one of the things we've seen over the last year, which has been really interesting, is that we think that all these tools out there, like code completions and all that, they're really interesting and they're quite useful for developers. But we think that like a lot more is possible, and really that we think is going to come from agents. And so we're spending a lot of energy kind of focused developing agents that we think can really help, achieve that goal of helping developers become 10, 20x more productive.
Right. So, okay, we've gone from 10x to 20 to 1,000. Like, yeah, that's that acceleration that you're talking about, because there's definite that what we see in the industry in general is that this technology is self-perpetuating and just creates a flywheel of innovation and technical advancement, right? That's just what it does. And that's kind of been the prediction for AI and this sort of technology for a number of years. And like you said, before it was more mainstream, it was kind of always the realm of the data scientist, the
Yeah,
ML
it's
guy in the
more like
company,
ML. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
but now it's kind of at people's fingertips. And to that point, the acceleration is going to get, quicker and quicker. And it's a little bit scary to that point. You mentioned software in the world. There's a great book that I've read, Life 3.0 by Max Tegmark. He talks about this Amiga project, and it's effectively an AI that was built by the company, special ops part of the company. And effectively, they started it, and it became super self-aware really quickly. But it just effectively got smarter by rewriting itself and rewriting itself, and eventually, basically, long story short, went out and consumed the world, and in a good way, made the world a better place. It was one of those good stories. It wasn't the bad stories of AI and robots and whatnot. But that initial learning and the self-betterment is, I think, where we're at today with a lot of coders in this world, right? Where they are getting better. It's going to be, more acceleration and. That's where this is really exciting. It's scary, but exciting at the same time. We'll talk about agents in a second. I just wanted to get the listeners to understand, you plug into the IDE, and then is it then talking to a service that you're running somewhere? You mentioned the vector database. Is a SaaS platform that's running that interprets the code that's running on the local IDE and then kind of does its thing? Or how does the interaction work between the IDE and the actual smarts of your platform?
Yeah. No, great question. The answer turns out to be a little bit complicated because developers and organizations are very concerned about their code security and
That's what I was getting at,
access,
yeah.
access to their code. And so today in our IDE, the way it works is that when we actually index your code base, we actually deploy like very seamlessly. You don't really notice it as a user, but we deploy a vector database on your machine, and all the vectors, the embeddings are stored in there. So everything is local on your machine. So we don't store any of your code in our system, in our cloud. We don't use any of your data for model training. None of our AI partners. We work with a bunch of the big kind of public LLMs. like OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, but we none of them, do any model training off of your off of the consumer's request, the user's request. But anyway, so a request you make, we might like access that vector database on your machine, grab the relevant context, send it comes into our, service running in our cloud, and then we send the request to an LLM. And then get back the result, maybe format it and send it back to your machine.
Oh, yeah, okay, I get it.
So it's kind of like a multi-tiered kind of architecture, but we don't, like I said, store anything in our, we store a little bit of metadata, like to understand, for example, oh, you were trying to ask us to explain code or, some logging about where this request came from, but we don't store any specifics about the request.
That's really interesting and a good point, right? Because I think obviously privacy is so huge a topic when it comes to AI and generative AI in general. What IP is there? I mean, what is the protection of the data that's in the model, where's it been sourced from? So the fact that you've thought about that from the start, and you kind of are talking about, that pri it's almost like a private model to a certain extent, or the data is kept privately through the vector database, and the smarts are put through those models up there. It probably makes people's minds rest easier than, say, if they're pumping it directly into a OpenAI platform or whatever the other ones are, and where the data is intrinsically just pumped into it. That's really good. So here's my thing. So I told you earlier that I've been building a bit of a side funky project, using ChatGPT, and it's been really fun and interesting, but frustrating at the same time, right? Because what I'll do is I've got Visual Studio open, and then what I'll do is I'll tell it something. I want XYZ, draw me this. I feel like this should be a feature. It gives me the code. I translate it into Visual Studio, see if it works, and then I'm copying, pasting. So
Sounds
it's
like you should
good, but
use Bitter.
it sounds like I should use Bitter, right? Absolutely. And I'm
Yeah.
probably going to give it a go, right? But what
Yeah.
is the difference in that? So effectively, what you've done here is you've made that seamless, right? That's kind of what I'm trying to get at. So because there is a ton of frustration, you kind of get used to it to a certain extent and you live
Sure.
with it, but there's a better way, right? And this is what you guys are basically pushing here with Bitto.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, one is like by having it built in your IDE, right? It's just really easy to kind of immediately copy the code over. You can easily iterate on it. We have a lot of templates that are built to like, document the code, write test cases, right? So you just literally select code. There's a prompt that's already been created. So you just one click and you write a whole test case, versus like copying in the code, typing something in. But I think maybe even more interesting is the fact that, we understand your code base, right? So if you think about that, I mean, you don't, ChatGPT doesn't understand anything about
No,
about
it's
your code base. So.
you're constantly reiterating what it's doing, and then sometimes the window will time out, so you got to start again. Then you got to spend the time to go, hey, this is what we were doing. You were doing it before, but you don't remember it. But I'm going to tell you again what you're doing. So there's a lot of relearning and reinforcement that needs to go into ChatGPT as an example, which is quite frustrating and it's quite inefficient.
Yeah, so you can say like, hey, I want to update my authentication, methods to use Google OAuth 2, or, whatever. Let's say you use that, right? And then so it will go and find all the authentication methods in your system, in your code base, and then, to pass that to the LLM with your instructions and rewrite all that, And so then you get all that output. And so, I mean, I'm not saying it's like perfect every time or anything like that, but, you get 80, 90, 100% of the way there in about 10 seconds, right? Versus like trying to hunt through your code and figure out all the different things. And so I think
That's,
by
yeah.
understanding your code base, we think that's like a really, kind of powerful thing. The other thing we have is a CLI. So we have like a, you can access Bitto through your CLI. And so we see people using that for automation. And that's kind of where, where some of our real thinking around agents started to come from is like, we've seen dev teams, like a tech QA teams, for example, say, oh, we're going to run, take the code base, or take the, changes that somebody's made and ask it to generate, test cases. Actually, one of the things that one QA team showed us is that they take a set of code and they'll ask Bitto, like, show me ways to break this code. And
No.
then they'll get the responses from, from Bitto, from an LLM, and then they will take that and say, now write me unit tests that will test these issues, right? And so then they kind of are hardening, using testing as a way to like harden their code base.
It's really interesting. I was thinking about in this particular, I mean, it's I've built it as a kind of semi SaaS platform. It's got authentication, but and it's got elements of a database where as I go along, I think I'll actually got to add a new table or a new entry into the database. And then what I've got to do is got to remember myself, again, hacker here, right? But I've got to think to myself, okay, every part that I've referenced the database entries when I get it out to the website, I've got to actually go back and now add the new tables and the new data points, and where is it all, and so if it's not in my mind, then if I'm not if it's still
Yeah,
small, it's okay.
totally.
When it gets bigger, it's like it's crazy. So this is where this can help as well. So even for
Actually,
me,
the demo video that we have on our homepage, actually, that was one of the kind of use
there you
cases
go.
we showed, which was
So
like, hey, I want to add this column into this database, like into this table, but like, can you show me everywhere I need to update my code base? And
wow,
update
okay. That wasn't even planned. We didn't even plan that, but that's worked out well, right? So
Yeah.
yeah, so I'm thinking how valuable this is, and that this is just me as a side project. I'm now people that are actually do this for a living, so to speak. This is huge, right? So how does it decide what model to use? Like, how do you dictate that? Is it? I noticed a couple of pricing plans there that differentiate some level of access, but in general, if someone's doing it through the IDE, do you just use the best model that's available at the time for the question, or is there something that goes in the background there?
Yeah, so we have a couple of different things. So one, so we have like the product's free. You can start out free and use it for free, and that gives you access to what we call basic AI models like GPT 3.5 Turbo and Google, some of their more basic models like Chat
Bard or whatever.
Bison.
Yep,
Bison is kind of one of their
awesome.
core kind of chat models. Anyways, and then we have an advanced, we call it advanced AI models, which is GPT-4 and Anthropic's Claude 2. And so those are accessible in our paid plan, which is like $15 a month. And so, but the other thing that we do then, even within basic and advanced, is we try to find the best fit model, for what you're trying to do. So like a simple example of that would be traditionally GPT-4, only had like a 16K, context limit. Now they had 32K, but actually almost nobody ever really had access to it. They've announced like GPT-4 Turbo has a 100K context limit, which is, a lot better and great. But it's not like really broadly available today. Anthropic's Claude 2 has a 200,000K context window, which, just to provide some, that's about a 250 pages. So, pretty much any code file can fit, in that, or, even some small repos could fit in that. And so, basically based on the context of the question and what you're asking, we will like find the best model that we
Cool.
think will, for example, that expanding context window, can affect it. So if you're just giving like a very short thing, or you give us two functions and you're like, hey, help me edit this, then, that's like we can use GPT-4. But if you give us five code files and you say, I want to do XYZ, then, we might need to use Claude's, 2.1 model. So
Okay.
those are kind of some of the different, types of things that we're doing. So we try to manage some of that for the user, so you don't have to think about that. That being said, we have, of course, people saying, oh, I only want to use this model. So we're also building capabilities so that you like dictate the model that you want.
I get
But
you.
most of the
Yeah,
time, most
interesting.
users don't want to think about it, to be honest.
Okay, yeah, so you take that away. It's a bit of a back end sort of decision that's made based on what the entry is, what the data is that's going in.
Exactly.
Hey,
Exactly.
oh, good stuff. Okay, so now that we've got that sorted out, talk to me about agents, because you mentioned agents. So what are agents and how are they different to, what people are doing today?
Yeah, so we think, agents are important and are going to be the future. So agents, we define them, and a lot of people are talking about agents and new words like agentic are coming up, but agents we define as something that really completes an entire workflow or task. And so, we really see Bitto as like building these dev agents, which are agents for devs, to help them complete these everyday tasks and workflows. And what we to give you some examples for that, we've just launched like a code review agent. And so that agent will sort of integrates into Git, GitHub and GitLab, Bitbucket's coming soon. And basically when you submit a PR and developer says, hey, I want somebody to review this code, it runs an entire kind of code review, on that code. And it also incorporates in static analysis tools and, also open source vulnerability scans. And so it takes all those recommendations from those tools and then suggests you like line level changes. And so our thought there is that a lot of time and energy gets spent in code review and dev organizations, but this agent we think can, reduce that time by, 50% probably. And as our, agents get better and the AI gets better, we think that can go down to like be reduced 80%. Or we've even had some, organizations tell us, like, for example, we give you a score about what's the quality, of this PR pull request. And we also give you a number score on the complexity of the PR. So some organizations said, hey, if it's a really high quality PR, like the code submitted is really good quality and well done, and it's a really low complexity thing, imagine like a one line change, then maybe we don't even need a human to review it. The AI could just say, hey, just auto merge this,
Right.
So there's a lot of,
and that's the agent. That's the agent component. So it's, so because when I think of agent, I think of something that sits on a little computer and does little background work and whatnot. But you're talking about this in a literal sense, like a help, like almost like a helper guy, like someone.
Yeah.
The AI is replacing a human to do something, right? Like that they are literally an agent sitting there and going, yes, no, that's good, that's bad, let's go through it again.
Yeah, exactly. And so it runs and says, hey, you should do all these things, or so it's something that, again, fits into kind of a workflow that you have, or, a process that you have, and kind of completes, that task, or gives like an initial kind of pass through. And we actually want to make these agents available in your IDE as well, so that before you go to submit to PR, you can run this, code review agent and say, oh yeah, it's in my IDE. And so like, it gave me the feedback, I can change it before I even get to pull request. So those are, some of the types of, agents that are out there. An agent that we built, yeah.
Hey, good stuff there. I think I want to spend the last sort of 8 or so minutes talking about just the state of generative AI, especially in the DevOps world and the developer world, and job security, right? Because, I know that a lot of the sort of big headlines were like, that's it, developers are dead, there's going to be job losses, 2024 is going to come in and we're going to see all this craziness in the market. And I don't think we've seen that, right? What's your thoughts on where we are today and how this sort of technology is going to help? Like, we talked about generative AI, I mentioned earlier, like, is this assistive AI as well? So, where are we at there, and what's your thoughts on how it's going to impact jobs moving forward?
Yeah. So I think if you think back to when ChatGPT was launched, right, I think November of 2022, there was a lot of talk, right? I mean, I was on text threads with friends who were, CEOs of software companies who were like, oh my God, everyone's going to lose their job, like blah, 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 blah. And I think let's fast forward, 15 months, a year, basically. I don't think too many people have lost their job, from AI. And in fact, I think if you talk to most people in most companies, they would say, I don't really use AI to do anything, So I think that, sort of some of those very short-term concerns have been a bit like overblown. But I think in the medium term, I think there could be some, job loss as people get more efficient.
Yeah.
But I think like, if you think back to like when we have had other, these kind of step changes, and, when we can debate whether this is a step change or not, but if you just assume it is for a second, like compared to like, let's say the Industrial Revolution, absolutely. It's like, okay, well, yeah, we might move to factories. And so you say, oh, there is some job loss because like, oh, now this factory produces more stuff more efficiently. But I think if you look out over time, like a lot more jobs were created because humans are really innovative and they just keep consuming more and more, kind of stuff. And I think, the way I like to think about it a little bit is, if you think about most companies, they have a backlog of features that they never get to. You know, and that backlog, you know, it's kind of almost a joke sometimes, right? Oh, it's in the backlog. And it's like, okay, so maybe I'm never going to see that again, you know? But, you know, if you look, think about like Marc Andreessen's quote, you know, about software is eating the world. I mean, I sort of feel like you haven't really seen anything yet. You know, if we're talking about 10, 20X improvement, and capabilities for developers, like we're going to produce a lot more software. So you're going to be able to go a lot further down on that backlog, you know? And I think if you think about where you live in a competitive world, yeah, you could say, oh, I don't need any software developers anymore. But I think the reality is the pace of innovation is just going to go at a much, much faster pace, because that's kind of what's happened throughout time, is like innovation just
gone it's faster, that flywheel. Faster. Yeah, the flywheel always kicks in and everything gets quicker and more accepted. Yeah, it gets bigger. So
customers want more and more, you know? And so you're like, well, I can now, as a company, a for-profit company, you're like, well, if I build this feature faster, I can get that customer segment, or I can sell it to this new thing. And then your competitors are doing that too, by the way. So I think like what this is going to result in is probably like almost more software developers, or at least software developers who are like more and more productive, you know, and producing output, you know?
I mean, could argue that I'm now a software developer, right? You could argue that. That's scary in itself.
Let's not get carried away.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I like that. We didn't even joke about that. No, that's all good.
Let's go back like 40 years in software development. You were writing like machine level code, right? And machine and then maybe assembly, right? So you're writing assembly, and you know, then those like C++ came out, right? And then Java came out. And it was like, oh my God, now I don't have to do garbage collection, right? It takes care of that for me. It's like, oh my God, like this is a higher and higher levels of abstraction. And so I think this is kind of a next big level of abstraction where, you know, you don't maybe have to manage all the syntax all the time. And, you know, you've got tools to help you do that and agents to help you kind of do some of that stuff. So I just think like a lot of this is going to help the pace of innovation, you know, go faster. You know, I was talking to a CIO at a big drug company, a pharma company, and he was kind of saying that like one of the things that they're, you know, looking at is like, okay, we this is not it for a developer, but just to give a sense in another domain.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, well, we have a new drug and we produce some marketing collateral, you know, in English.
Big use
but
of it, yeah.
We do need to produce that collateral in like 100 different languages because we're in 100 different countries. So can we use AI to help us do that, right? And so now they're like, okay, that process used to take 4 months. Now maybe we can get done in 2 weeks, right? And have like imagery and, you know, collateral that's produced in like all these different things. So, you know, I just think the world's going to go faster and faster.
Yeah, that's right. And I think to that example, you know, that might impact. So my belief is that in the dev world, DevOps-y, the software development world, it's only going to make that people more productive, and it will generate more competition. We've seen that the proliferation of AI companies that have popped up almost as much as what crypto companies popped up when crypto was big, right? So there'll be a consolidation at some point with that, absolutely. But I think what you've just talked about there is probably the more concern around this world, where, you know, a marketer would have had to sit there and translate, and people, they would have had to hire a translator, go through some cash, and that might have taken a few months, whereas now they probably don't have to do that. So outside of the realm of software development and devs and whatnot, there is potential for some job security issue. But like you said, life finds a way, humanity finds a way, and we've as a stepped approach, whether it be industrial revolution, you know, whatever it might be, all these revolutions that come at us, people survive and thrive. That's kind of what we do, right? So yeah, it's all good. Hey, we've got like about a minute left. Just give us a little bit in a very quick sort of succinct way. What's the next steps for Bitto? What are you looking to achieve in 2024?
Yeah. So like I said, I mean, agents is a big focus for us. We've come out with this code review agent. We just kind of soft launched it. We've got a bunch of companies trying it out. We're excited about that. And then we're working on a unit test agent. And so we really think that these things could really help companies a lot in 2024. And we want to make them great for people.
Great stuff. Hey, Emma, this has been a really great conversation. I've enjoyed it. Wish we could talk longer, but I'm really excited for what Bitto's doing. And you know what? I'm going to install it. I'm going to play with it, and I'm going to see how good it is. So you can probably, and what I'll do is I'll tell people about it as well. So I'm not, that's really exciting for me moving forward. So, hey, thanks for being on the show. This is a reminder, if you love great things with great tech and like to feature in future episodes, hit gtwgt.com or at GTWGT Podcast on Twitter, X, or on YouTube. And with that, thanks for being on episode 77, and we'll see you next time on Great Things with Great Tech.
Awesome. Thank you so much.